Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R., and joining me for this episode is Ray Hernandez. Ray, how you doing, sir?
Excellent, sir. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for coming on. I'm glad to have your time. We were talking a little bit in a pre-podcast. So a reminder, remind people who you are, the foundations, and the research you're doing.
Okay. My name is Ray Hernandez, and I have an academic background. I went to the University of California, Berkeley, for a PhD. I went there with the National Science Foundation research, PhD research fellowship. And I then had a series of experiences that were, at that time, I thought UFO related, but they were primarily paranormal experiences, which included also seeing what is commonly described as UFOs. And then I hooked up with a series of PhD academics, including the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who has a PhD from MIT, Sixth Man to Walk on the Moon, founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and who should be known more than anything as really one of the pioneers within the field of exploring consciousness and psychic phenomenon. And he founded in 1972 the Institute for Noetic Sciences, which is now the leading academic research institute on the psi phenomenon. So that's Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And the other co-founder of an organization that eventually came to be known as the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Free Foundation was Dr. Rudy Shields, who was a PhD professor of astrophysics for over 45 years at Harvard University. And he had been a very dear friend of the late John Mack. And that's how he became interested in this phenomenon of ufology. And then the other final fourth co-founder was Mary Rodwell, someone who had worked with UFO contact experiencers for over 30 years. And so what had happened was that all of us got together and discussing that there was zero academic research on UFO contact experiencers. Okay. There had been a small research study done by Dr. Kenneth Ring, who was a professor of psychology, and he published a document in 1992, which was a statistical academic research study of where he compared 85 NDE experiencers with 85 primarily UFO contact experiencers. And then Kathleen Martin, who was also a member of our organization, she had done a very small statistical research study of only 50 people. She only asked 50 questions, and she only targeted abductees from the United States. So that was extremely limited. And so what we, and I'm talking about a group that later had over 10 PhD academics and many other non-academics, people like Kathleen Martin, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, Barbara Lamb, et cetera, et cetera. And then we had many other PhD academics, almost all of them were retired. And we decided as a group, you know, how do we begin to study for the first time ever, statistically, UFO contact experiencers? So we spent 9 months doing this. We came up with three surveys. Two of them were quantitative. One was qualitative. The quantitative surveys had over 600 questions that we asked. The qualitative survey instrument had 70 open-ended questions. We then publicized it everywhere. We had many people in our organization that had weekly radio shows like the one that you have. One was Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She had a weekly radio show on KGRA. Kathleen Martin, every week she was on a radio show into being interviewed. Same thing with Barbara Lamb and numerous other people in our organization. We had a mailing list of over 5,000 names. These were mainly people that had an interest in UFO topics. And then we publicized it in over 200 Facebook groups, focusing primarily on UFOs. And so it got circulated all around the world. So over a 3.5 year period, we received more than 4,300 responses from UFO contact experiencers from more than 125 countries. Okay. And so we then had a PhD academic that worked with us, Dr. Russell Scalpone, and we had five PhDs that actually analyzed the data. And it was the PhDs that analyzed the data. And when we started crunching out the data, what we realized was that our research findings pretty much contradict almost everything that's circulating in ufology. Okay. And so we published our research findings in an 820-page book titled Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence. And that book, roughly half of the chapters were written by these PhD academics. And volumes one and two, which are over 300 pages, was an analysis of our statistical data. Okay, and volumes one was an analysis of the quantitative data. And that was written by myself, Dr. Rudy Shields, and Dr. John Klimo, who is a professor of psychology for over 45 years. And then chapter two was an analysis of the qualitative survey instrument, was written by Dr. John Klimo. So it was heavy-duty, academic-oriented type of research. But yet the field of ufology, the overwhelming number of people have not read the book because they didn't care about it. Why? Because it had the word consciousness in our title. And so anytime you mention the word consciousness, immediately these materialists, people that view everything from a nuts and bolts perspective, are totally dismissive. But yet we are the PhDs, okay? Materialist ufology, how many PhD academics do they currently have right now? Okay. I mean, you tell me who they are.
Not very many. I'm going to tell you something. When you say consciousness, and I think people fail to understand this, it's without consciousness, there is no perception of anything, not what you consider real, not what you consider fiction. Consciousness is basically the energy that helps us to exist here in the plane that we're at. So a lot of things come down to perception. You know, there's no question about the governments and the military and some of the craft that they've documented and filmed. I mean, undoubtedly, the idea of something flying around our airspace that we can't identify, it's unquestionable. What's at the controls is the question mark. I spent the last year kind of speaking with a lot of people of experience, abductees, or as they choose to call themselves, experiencers. Because at the end of the day, I've witnessed nothing in life. I've never seen anything. And so I was trying to comprehend and understand what it is that this phenomena is. And I think you're onto something when you say, perhaps like maybe there's something in the human brain that has, some people have software that other people don't have in their computer, their brain.
Well, let me give you some of our major data findings. And then I want to transition into some of the work that I'm currently doing.
Okay.
First of all, what we concluded, and we also published our research findings in a peer-reviewed academic journal. It's the Journal of the Society for Scientific Exploration. And Dr. Jack Vallée, who we talked about earlier before, most of his academic research was published in the Society for Scientific Exploration. So we published in the same place as Jack Vallée published it, okay? And it's all PhD academics that published in that journal. And basically, it's known for parapsychology. So the research findings that we came up with are too numerous for me to discuss in this one-hour interview. But I just want people to know this. I can give you for free chapters one and chapters two, which are our academic analysis of the data. I can send that to you for free, as well as my latest book, a 200-page book, titled The Mind of God, a Spiritual Virtual Reality Model of Consciousness and the Contact Modalities. So send me an email. The email is info@agreaterreality.com. That's info@agreaterreality.com. And I'll send you all of this information for free. So now, in terms of getting back to your initial question, okay, what is behind the phenomenon? Dr. Jack Vallée, over 40 years ago, said that he does not believe in the ET hypothesis, that these are physical beings flying a physical, flying saucer, craft, whatever it might be, and that these beings are coming from a physical planet, you know. He says that he hypothesized that this is something much more complicated, and he alluded to that this is quite possibly a consciousness-based phenomenon involving a manipulation of space-time, okay? Alan Hynek brought that up even before Jacques Vallée, in the last years before he died. He started talking about these things. Not the early Alan Hynek or even the midlife Alan Hynek in Project Blue Book. We're talking about, you know, the last 2 years of his life. And I've got videotape interviews where he discusses these things, okay? So here you have the two godfathers of modern ufology, J. Alan Hynek and Dr. Jacques Vallée, both PhDs, okay, finally reaching a conclusion after their many, many years of research that, look, this is not flying saucers, that these are not ETs, that these are not beings coming from another planet. This is something much more complicated, and it's consciousness-based. But yet the field of what we call ufology, 99.9% of these people are all materialists. They're all view things from the opposite perspective of what Alan Hynek and Jacques Vallée have stated, okay? But yet, no one mentions these topics of Jacques Vallée and Alan Hynek in the last 2 years of his life. No. Also, there's zero statistical data on the UFO contact phenomenon, okay? And that's what our study was, okay? Because there was nothing, absolutely nothing. Okay, all you had was books that were written by individuals or books that were written based upon hypnotic regressions. And these were books like, for example, David Jacobs or Bud Hopkins. They've stated publicly in their interviews that most they only worked with 200 people. They pre-selected these people. Okay, they had a negative bias to begin with. Anyone that had a positive experience, they didn't want to interview them.
Right.
Or regress them. So they were thrown out the door. Okay. Well, we didn't have that. We let it open to anybody. But yet I have two criteria. One is you have to have seen UFOs. And secondly, you have to have had contact with a non-human intelligence. Okay. That was our sole criteria. And we had 4,300 people. And what did we find out? And I'm going to go over it real quickly because I want to focus on other aspects of it. First of all, initially, 37% viewed their experience as negative. Initially, many, many years later, in many cases, it was 30 years later, you know, 25 years later, only 4% viewed their experiences as negative. Let me give you a couple of case examples. Whitley Strieber wrote the book Communion. Horrific, horrific experiences. Okay.
Yeah, that movie scared me as a kid.
Well, he wrote that book in the early 1980s. Okay.
Right.
Now, look at Whitley Strieber now. He's Mr. Love and Light. Okay,
yeah.
He prays to this intelligence. He doesn't consider them beings. He considers them like modern angels. Okay, because they have given him spirituality. They have allowed him to communicate with his deceased wife. Okay, so his last three books are all about spirituality and love and light, and that's Whitley Strieber, the man who came up with Communion, who's one of the co-founders of the horrors of abductions. Okay, let's take a look at the second person. Kathleen Martin, she wrote the book Captured, okay?
Right.
The abduction of Benny and Barney Hill. Recently, within the last 9 months, she published a book titled From Abduction, From Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Kathleen Martin now is all love and light. And also, she's on the consciousness bandwagon, just like Whitley Strieber, okay? Well, guess what? The same thing happened to thousands of people that took our surveys. These all people went through the same transformations, okay? We administered 70 questions that talked about how they changed. How were they before and how were they after, okay? And we took that from that study that Dr. Kenneth Ring had done. And so we asked them the same thing. 85% of these people became much more spiritual, okay? More than 85% of them became much more loving to each other. They became much more ecological. They no longer feared death. Money was not important to them, okay? And they believed that the beings, that the intelligences that they were interacting with were primarily benevolent intelligence. Okay. Also, what we discovered, we wanted to find out about the abduction phenomena. What we discovered was that one third, 33% of these individuals had what they thought was an abduction phenomena. Okay. So that means two thirds never had an abduction. But yet the field of ufology believes that all contact revolves around an abduction. No, it does not. Secondly, the people that had an abduction, okay, more than 80% of these people now call themselves contactees, not abductees. Did you know that?
Yeah. You know, real quick, by the way you're phrasing it, the way you put it, so something popped in my head. I've never really quite heard anyone phrase it the way you have. Two things. There's enlightenment, and then there's like a bit of a Stockholm syndrome, it sounds like, where you know where your assailant is dangerous, and then all of a sudden it's a safe place for you. It's kind of bizarre. And the
No, what it is what we discovered was the physicality of the experience. All of a sudden appears in your living room, you know, these three short grays, or a reptilian being, or a mantid being, or an energy being. Energy being was the number one type of being seen by people. Wasn't the short grays. They were actually number three. The human-looking being was number two. Huh. But even if you see a human-looking being right in front of you, you know, dressed in an outfit and all that, and it's right on your bedside, you're going to be, you know, totally shocked.
Yeah, of course, because it's in your house at unannounced.
Yeah. Unannounced, or an energy being, you know. Right. And all of a sudden, you're getting messages from that energy being, okay? And that was the number one type of experience. It wasn't the grays. That was number three. And so what happened was, initially, 37% of these people viewed that experience as negative. But then over time, 40% of these people had 20 or more experiences. Huge numbers, okay? 40%. An additional 20% had between 10 to 20 experiences. So we're talking now 60% of these individuals had 10 or more experiences. So we did a statistical analysis of how many experiences you had and how positive you view your experiences. And what we saw that the more experiences you had, the more positive was your response. Okay. It was the people that only had one or two experiences, mainly these abduction type of experiences, that still viewed these experiences as highly negative. But as I said before, it was only 4%. Okay. So number two, what we discovered was that these abduction type of experiences were primarily astral realm type of paranormal experiences. It wasn't that they were brought to a physical craft.
You know, Ray, I'm glad I'm going to give you something. I do a lot of off podcast interviews just for research purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
A large portion of people that are having the contact are starting to, you know, lean towards the idea that their contacts in their subconscious, that these beings are able to tap into the human brain, which if you look at the human brain, it does have the ability to receive and put out transmission. And so that being said, a large percentage of people find that wear a smartwatch have enormous REM reading when they're having their experience.
Well, I mean, what you just said is 110% correct. And my own case in point, for example, literally right now all over the world, there's thousands of people doing CE5. They're calling down UFOs, okay?
Right.
How do they do it? They do it with their mind, okay? And in my case, within 15 minutes, they appear. They, in terms of an object that we perceive as a UFO, okay?
Right.
What I learned based upon my research was that what we're perceiving as UFOs are actually holographic projections, okay? These are consciousness-based holographic projections. One thing about the quote-unquote beings that people were seeing, okay? People were seeing tens of thousands of different types of beings, okay? Just the human-looking beings, there were thousands of descriptions. Just the short grays, there were thousands of short grays. Okay.
Yeah, you know, Ray, I have a kind of a theory that I run by because I've done.
Tell me your theory, and I'll tell you my hypothesis. Not only mine, but like tons of other researchers in this area.
So the majority of the people I've spoken to, the only beings that seem to have a real physicality to them, they're physical, are the shorter gray aliens, which in my opinion, or my theory anyhow, is that those are like a biological robot, like an avatar that other beings could control, you know, with uploading, downloading their consciousness to and from these beings. These are the on the ground grunt workers, because the remainder of the people I spoke to, the tall grays and the mantis and then the rest of them seem to be, like you said, almost holographic, almost like they're being produced there, which would make sense because they're a living entity, but there's no shot they're going to be able to breathe our air and be able to handle our conditions. Every planet's got its own conditions.
Yeah, let me address that question. Sure. Let me pose a question to you. Okay. Yeah. People were seeing tens of thousands of different types of beings. Like, right. For example, with just in the human-looking beings, and that was the number two category. Number one was the energy being. Just into number two human-looking beings, they were people saw Asians. People saw beings with African features. And the Asians, they went from one end to the other. Some saw like a Chinese warlord. Some saw like a Buddhist monk with brown hoodies, you know, robes.
Right.
And then in terms of the Caucasian types, you name it, people were seeing. Some were 15 feet tall. Some were a little tiny, like 2 feet tall. Some wore like Greek tunics. Others wore like Roman tunics. Other had like tight skin tight suits, like what are commonly called the Palladians, with the blonde hair and blue eyes. Other had white hair. Okay. Some had, you know, reddish eyes inside. You name it. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different types of human looking beings. And that's just human looking beings. Now, if we're talking about the short grays, again, there were thousands of different types of short grays. Some had uniforms. They were all different. Some were tall. Some were short. You know, some had certain color eyes. Other had other color eyes. Some had certain features. It was like, you know, some had a certain insignias. Other had different insignias. So my question to you is: there was a friend of mine, Robert Rosales? He has written 16 books. About encounters with humanoid beings. We're not talking about a human. We're talking about, you know, has a head.
Yeah, arms, bipedal. Right.
Yeah. And he's a document from all over the world, primarily Spanish-speaking countries, but it's all over the world. Thousands of different types of humanoid beings, even the robot types. He has like several books on just all robot categories, you know, that people were seeing. John Keane wrote the book about the Mothman, okay? Mm-hmm. And that was a flying, you know, a being, a humanoid being with wings. And part of it involved the robot that people were watching, okay? So then the question I want to pose to you is, are there really tens of thousands of different types of physical beings coming from tens of thousands of different planets, okay? Now, the overwhelming majority of these contact experiences, they last for less than 30 seconds.
Right.
Okay? So they come and they appear to you for less than 30 seconds, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, they disappear right in front of you, or they wither away like Star Trek, you know? They're dematerialized right in front of you, okay? So is it tens of thousands of different, you know, ETs coming from tens of thousands of physical planets for less than 10 minutes, and they're all different from each other, okay? And or is it something a little bit more complicated?
Okay? I'll answer that question. Based on the data you just given me, it seems to be that these beings are tailored to the individual based upon their consciousness.
Exactly. Bingo. The experiences, if you will find out, if you study enough case studies, they're all highly individualized, okay?
Right.
They're all very, very specific to that person. They're all different, okay? But yet they have certain commonalities, just like the near-death experience, okay? If you study thousands of near-death experience cases like I have, and a member of our board of directors is one of the leading researchers on NDEs. His name is Dr. Jeffrey Long. He's been studying NDEs for over 25 years. And he's also been doing statistical analysis because he's had a survey on NDEs for more than 20 years. Okay. And also I'm a very dear friend of Dr. Kenneth Rain. He was one of the early pioneers studying NDEs in the early 70s, not mid 70s. I'm sorry. Raymond Moody is a friend of mine. Okay. So I know these people, you know, on a personal level, okay? And plus, I would say that I'm also an authority on NDEs as well. And what I discovered and what they have told me was that all of these NDEs are all individualized to the individual, okay? They're all unique, but then they share certain commonalities. Let's say, for example, the NDEs is people, when they die, they see their body underneath them. They go through a tunnel. They go through a light at the end of the tunnel. At the end of the is waiting family members. They then meet this this being. Most of them see it as an energy being. Some people see Jesus Christ, whatever, but they know it's quote unquote God. And then they're given a life review. They're shown all the good things that they've done in their life and the bad things. And then they're transported to other areas in that heavenly realm. They're giving spiritual teaches. Some of them are shown their past lives. Some of them that don't want to come back to Earth are shown the future. They said, look, you got to come back because you're going to have four children. And they're actually shown pictures of their kids. And then they say, okay, I got to go back. I got four kids. They're going to be waiting for me, you know? And then they're also told about the importance of love. When you return, the most important concept that you need to learn is how to love each other. Okay.
Right.
Well, the same thing happens with UFO contact experiencers. There's certain commonalities, and that's we documented in our book. Doesn't happen to all of them, okay? But if you ask all of these people the same question, you'll find out, for example, you'll find out that 85% of these people were having paranormal experiences, okay? And once we documented all of these paranormal experiences, we discovered that these paranormal experiences were the overwhelming category of experiences they had. It wasn't seeing UFO or seeing a physical being, okay? They did see a UFO. They did see a perceived physical being. But 95% of their experiences were, quote-unquote, paranormal in nature. Huh. 50% of these people had a miraculous medical healing. Kathleen Martin is one of them, okay? If you interview her later on.
I did. I had her on a few times, and she did mention that.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Another thing is that 60%. 60% have seen orbs, physical orbs, not via picture, but real life physical orbs. Out of those people, close to 50% have been brought to other realities. Okay. Barbara Lamb has been brought to other realities. Okay. I've been brought to another reality in one of my experiences, and I wasn't dreaming. It wasn't like I was asleep. I was driving my freaking car in the middle of a traffic jam. And all of a sudden, boom, I'm in another location, another reality. And then all of a sudden, I was given all this information about the nature of our reality, okay? Which then allowed me to do the work that I'm doing now, okay? So anyway, 50% of these people said the same exact thing, okay?
That's a very interesting parallel you made. I never really considered that because I did speak to people with NDE.
No one asked the questions. You know to ask that question?
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't know to ask that. I mean, now the way you're so now I'd spoken to like people like Roberta Grimes about the afterlife, a lot of NDE people I'd spoken to on a show, and a lot of people.
These are all
contact.
UFO contact experiences.
Yeah,
these
but
are not.
Yeah, but the point I make is I've even spoken to a tremendous amount of people with contact experiences, and I do now, as you're phrasing, I kind of see the parallel now. It is very similar.
What it is that a lot of people that have NDEs, no one has really done the statistical analysis of that because no one ever asked the question. But if you talk to NDE experiencers, you'll find out that an overwhelming number of these people began to see deceased people after their NDE. Hmm. Okay. There's five medical doctors that have had NDEs that I know of that I've interviewed. Okay. Five of them saw dead people afterwards. Okay. It's like it opened up a portal. Right. Same thing with UFO contact experiencers, okay? You've had UFO contact, all of a sudden, you're seeing a dead person. Preston Dennett, you heard of his name before, right?
Yeah, actually, I have.
Okay, well, Preston Dennett is a case in point of someone that you know, okay? And he's just an illustration, okay, of someone that's had UFO contact that later on began to see dead people. We asked that question. Over 30% of the people that took our surveys, which are UFO contact experiences, 30% saw dead people, a ghost or a spirit, okay? Out-of-body experience, 60% of these people stated that they had out-of-body, no, 66%, two-thirds of the people stated that they had out-of-body experiences, okay? So I could go on and on with all these paranormal experiences, okay? But the basic gist of it was that these people were having overwhelming percentages of paranormal experiences after the UFO contact, okay? And if you talk to any major UFO contact experiencer, they will say the same thing. the people in Skinwalker Ranch, okay?
Right.
After they had those encounters at Skinwalker Ranch, all these people were having paranormal experiences.
You know, okay? Not to mention, at Skinwalker Ranch, I've been finding out recent study, and I think they covered a bit of it on the show, but below the surface of Skinwalker Ranch is fluid water moving. With a lot of like different kind of metals, which is creating a magnetic field, which is going to alter the reception of their brain.
I don't buy that, because UFO contact experiencers are seeing UFOs and having contact all throughout the world.
Right.
Okay. All over the United States. My experiences started in Miami, Florida. Okay. Where I began to call down UFOs. My wife was praying at night these huge UFOs would appear. And inside my house was like, you know, a paranormal haven, you know, and we were in Miami. All right. So
let me ask this, then,
urbanized
Ray.
Area, but that is an example of these UFO contact experiences, these major experiences.
Right.
They're in cities, they're in rural areas, they're all over the place. It has nothing to do with water and minerals and stuff.
Yeah.
What it is that these individuals are trying to come up with a materialist explanation of what might be happening. But as I explained in my book, actually, maybe now's a good time to talk about it.
Yeah.
My book, The Mind of God, a spiritual virtual reality model of consciousness in the contact modality. It's only 200 pages, okay? But this is the introductory article to my 4-volume book series, okay? Each volume is 800 pages, okay?
I'm interested in reading that, by the way.
Yeah. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
I've got your email. I'll send you a PDF copy of it.
Perfect.
The title of the book is A Greater Reality, The New Paradigm of Non-Local Consciousness, The Paranormal, and the Contact Modalities. Now, volumes 1 and 2, each of these volumes are 800 pages, are written primarily by PhD academics, okay, and medical doctors. And they all explain the interrelationship between consciousness and various aspects of the paranormal.
Huh.
Okay. So it's making the link between consciousness studies and what we call in our organization, the Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, the contact modalities. Okay. And that's a term that I developed it in 2013. Now, for example, some of the authors, let me just go very quickly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jeffrey Kripal is the dean of the School of Humanities at Rice University in Texas. Anybody that knows about Rice University, you know it's like a little Harvard. You need a 1500 on your SATs to get in there, okay? And it's an elite academic institution, okay? He's the dean of the School of Humanities. He was a longtime professor, tenured professor of religion and philosophy. We also have an introductory doctor by a retired medical doctor who's one of the world's major contact experiencers. She's seen 12 UFOs twice with her husband and all different types of UFOs, okay? Getting back to these UFOs come in all shapes and sizes and configurations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's had 2 near-death experiences. Her second NDE occurred while she was working as a medical doctor. And that was a profound experience, okay? She also has had numerous out-of-body experiences, okay? Astral travel experiences. Her whole childhood was astral travel, where she was taught lessons at an astral level. She's had 3 Sasquatch experiences, 2 of them very up close. One of them was the whole night with Sasquatch. And she was scared, you know, to death. Based upon that experience. But it didn't do any harm to her, okay? And she realized after that experience that Sasquatch was actually not a physical being. It had a physical presence, okay?
Hmm.
She physically saw it. She heard the noises. She smelled it, okay? The whole works. But just like so many other researchers of the Sasquatch phenomenon, they quickly come to realize that this is a consciousness-based phenomenon. And after her second NDE, she began to see all these dead people in her hospital that she worked in, okay? Like these ghosts of spirits in physical form would go through walls. They would go through elevator doors, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's her case example is an example of why we need to study all of the paranormal, what we call the contact modalities, as one consciousness-based phenomenon. Why? Because that's what we discovered in our research study of UFO contact experiencers, that these individuals were having everything in the kitchen sink. But not only for the UFO contact experiencers, also with the near-death experiencers, okay? These people that are having NDEs are also having all of these paranormal experiences. And in our book, we have about 10 cases of individuals that had NDEs. And if you read the articles that they wrote for volumes 3 and 4, you'll see that their whole life are paranormal experiences. But
you know what's interesting?
People started with an NDE. It started with an NDE.
It's interesting because a lot of past studies, one guy example a lot, I was amazed by his story. He was in a car accident, had a significant brain damage or brain trauma, and he could just play the piano, like at a master's level, with zero lessons, like something was tapped into.
Those are very common, those stories.
Yeah, so when you're having an NDE, maybe your computer, your brain, is now, all right, something's wrong, let's fire all units, let's figure this out, and maybe you start utilizing a part of the brain or some software you otherwise wouldn't utilize. Because in my opinion, Ray, yeah, I think our consciousness and our soul are the same thing. It's a raw energy, and it comes from a source.
You need to read my book, The Mind of God.
I definitely do.
you need to read it from the beginning to the end, because I lay out a theoretical hypothesis of how all of this works. Okay? And this is based upon all these professors that have written chapters. Let me just continue a little bit. Michael Grosso got a PhD from Columbia University, was a professor of philosophy for over 40 years. His article is titled Contact with Transcendent Mind. Larry Dossey, medical doctor, has written over 40 years on the topic of consciousness and medical healings, okay? Bruce Grayson, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia School of Medicine, one of the pioneers of NDE research, okay? Peter Sturrock, professor of physics at Stanford University for over 45 years, okay? Jim Tucker, professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. All four of them wrote an article titled Consciousness, What Is It? Okay? And this is all in my book, okay? Tom Campbell wrote a very famous book. He's a physicist, okay? He's ABD, just like me, all but dissertation. And he wrote a chapter titled An Information-Based Theory of Consciousness that explains the hard problems of consciousness, fundamental physics, and all of the contact modalities and parapsychology, including UFOs, okay? So he worked with Robert Monroe doing out-of-body experiences since Robert Monroe first began doing his research study. He was Robert Monroe's guinea pig. And this guy's, you know, a physicist, okay? He worked for the military research industrial complex for over 45 years, okay? Larry Dossey, another medical doctor, wrote the title, an article titled The Mind of God, okay? Eben Alexander, a professor at the Harvard School of Medicine. He was a professor of neurosurgery for over 15 years. He taught medical students how to do brain operations. Hmm. Okay, well, guess what? He had a major near-death experience. And in this chapter, he talks about the primacy of consciousness, why consciousness is fundamental and not our physical material reality. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the late Apollo 14 astronaut, wrote an article which has never been published before except in an astrophysics journal, which nobody read, okay? But we got permission to copy that article. And that's Edgar's, by far, number one article, okay?
That's in the book as well?
It's in the book as well. It's over 50 pages. And it's titled The Quantum Hologram and the Nature of Consciousness. It's not an easy read, okay? It's not an easy read at all. Edgar was a very complex man. People just think that he's associated with UFOs. No, that's the least of Edgar's accomplishments. Okay. Dr. Glenn Ryan is a PhD. His PhD is in biochemistry. He worked for over 30 years in major medical schools in the United States. And what he did is he took Edgar's theory of the quantum hologram and he applied it to contact with non-human intelligence, you know, from a consciousness perspective. Rudy Shields, professor of astrophysics at the Harvard University for over 45 years, he wrote an article titled Chapter X, consciousness, the brain, the soul, and God, a computer model of consciousness and the contact modalities.
You know what's going to be interesting, Ray, is the neurosurgeon, to me, is interesting. Because I worked in medical for some period of time in my life, and typically neurosurgeons or, you know, these guys don't really have any kind of spirituality. I mean, they're very medically, scientifically inclined to think a certain way. And to hear someone transition and even, I don't even want to say transition. It sounds like he is a neurosurgeon who had an experience and now is able to blend.
He had a near-death experience.
Right. So he was able to bridge the gap between spirituality and conventional science.
Well, half of the people that wrote articles for a book of these academics and medical doctors, half of them had contact experiences.
Interesting.
Okay. Half of them. Stephen A. Schwartz was one of the founders of remote viewing. You heard of remote viewing, right?
Familiar with it. Yep.
Okay. He was doing remote viewing before the Stanford Research Institute. Okay. And he's universally known as one of the pioneers of remote viewing. Okay. And so he wrote an article on remote viewing that's in our book. We also have articles by a PhD philosopher from New York University. And she was won one of the awards of the Bob Bigelow consciousness essay. I don't know if you heard about that.
I've heard Bigelow with the conscious. I didn't know that there was something dedicated to that. I did hear.
The grand prize was $500,000. Okay. And that was awarded to Dr. Jeffrey Mishloff, and Dr. Jitin Mishloff wrote an article also for our book. Okay. He got $500,000 from this, and Sharon got one of the runners up for $50,000, and Dr. Jeffrey Long, the medical doctor that I told you about.
Yeah.
He got one of the grand runner-up prizes of the $50,000 as well. So Sharon Hewitt wrote an article titled Beyond Death, The Based Evidence for the Survival of Human Consciousness. Dr. Bruce Grayson, who I said before, was a professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He wrote an article, which is basically a survey of near-death experience research. Okay. Dr. Jeffrey Long was an interview that I had with him. I went to Houma, Louisiana to interview him about NDEs, and later on he admitted that his own opinion, all of the contact modalities, all of the paranormal, are interrelated, just like NDEs. They shouldn't be studied separately. They need to be studied as one phenomenon. Same thing with Raymond Moody. He's also in that section. We have his interview, and he said the same exact thing, that consciousness is primary, consciousness is fundamental. Jeffrey Long said the same thing. Bruce Grayson said the same thing.
Steve Murr says that same thing, too. Steve Murr has been on the show a handful of times.
That's what these books are all about. Two items, that consciousness is fundamental and not our physical reality. And number two, that all of what we call the contact modalities, all of what is commonly called the paranormal, okay, that all of these experiences should not be studied as separate and distinct phenomena, okay,
right.
Because they're not. They need to be studied as one integrated phenomenon, okay? Why? Because they're all consciousness-based, okay? Including the UFO contact phenomenon. Now, let me just briefly go over some of these other authors here. Joseph Brooks is a retired medical doctor. We have 11 chapters on UFOs. You understand that? 11 chapters.
That's incredible, man.
On just on UFOs. We have Joseph Brooks, who, retired medical doctor, has been calling down UFOs since 1972. And his article is Human Initiated Contact, The Consciousness Connection, and the Virtual Reality Hypothesis. Okay. Uh-huh. John Klimo, PhD academic, Otherworldly and Interdimensional Realities, the UFO Phenomenon. Okay. We have two articles by the late Brad Steiger. And he was the number one writer on the paranormal, okay? He's written over 175 books on the paranormal. Out of those, maybe 20 were about UFOs. I don't know if you ever heard his name.
No, I haven't. I'll have to look him up.
He passed away in 2018. But he's been writing about the paranormal and UFOs since the mid-1950s.
Wow.
Okay. Dr. Charles Emmons, professor of sociology, now retired. He wrote an article titled Methodologies for the Mysterious, UFOs and Consciousness. Dr. Jeffrey Mishloff, PhD from Berkeley, okay, the school I went to, he wrote an article titled An Extraordinary Experiment. Will Ted Owens produce a UFO for me? And it's a guy that produced UFOs at will. and a whole bunch of paranormal associated with his life.
I just came across that name not long ago.
Ted Owens. Well, yeah. He wrote an article. He was the major researcher of Ted Owens, and that was Jeffrey Mishlove. We also have another PhD physicist, astrophysicist from Italy, Dr. Massimo Teodorani. He wrote an article titled Out of the Blind, In Search of a New Science for the UFO Phenomenon. Okay. Dr. Michael Grosso, the PhD philosopher, wrote an article titled The New Story, UFOs, Psychical Research, and Religion. Okay. And George Knapp, we even included an interview with George Knapp, the famous announcer at Coast to Coast Radio. Okay. And Dr. John Alexander, who has a PhD, he did his PhD on near-death experiences. He wrote a book about UFOs as well. He wrote a title, an article titled Phenomena Without Borders, Consciousness, the Paranormal, and UFO Contact. Okay. We also have another professor who is a professor at the Military College in Canada. Okay. He's a sociologist. He wrote about UFO apparitions. Okay. The religious aspect of it, because a lot of people have, over the years, viewed them from a religious perspective. Anyway, other academics here on entheogens, which are hallucinogenic type of experiences, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It was five PhDs, wrote an article on their research that they've been doing now for 20 years on psilocybin, which is the ingredient in magic mushrooms, and DMT was the ingredient inside ayahuasca. So that article is titled God Encounters, Comparisons Among Naturally Occurring Experiences and Those Occasioned by the Classic Psychedelics, Psilocybin, LSD, Ayahuasca, and DMT. So what he was comparing to is people that have had these psychedelic experiences, he compared it to the near-death experience, that they were so similar.
Yeah, because the brain, when you have a near-death experience or any kind of traumatic experience for that matter, your brain releases DMT. No, it's not the
brain. Your brain has nothing to do with it. Okay? No? Let me stop you right there, okay? When you have when you die and you have a near-death experience, mm-hmm. roughly a third of these people go out of their body and they see their body underneath them. Right. Okay. In many of these cases, the heart is not pounding. The brain, some of these people were connected to these electronic monitoring systems on their brain. They've had zero monitoring, zero electrical output. Right. I don't know what the formal term is on their brain. So their brain is dead. Like Eben Alexander. He's a classic case. His brain was like mush. It was like mashed potatoes. Okay. They were going to pull the cord on him. But yet during all this time, who's being kept alive by these machines, okay? He was having a profound near-death experience. So it has nothing to do with the brain.
Yeah, because that used to concern me. I used to get worried about that.
No. Once you're outside your body and you see your body underneath you, okay?
Right.
Then you know it's not your brain, because your brain is not up there floating around, okay? It's your consciousness. That's what a lot of people don't understand. And if you read my book, The Mind of God, you'll begin to understand that, okay? We also have articles, as I said before, by other medical doctors and PhD academics, and that's volumes 1 and 2 of our book, A Greater Reality. Anyone that sends me an email, I will send you tons of materials. I will send you my entire book, The Mind of God. I will send you selective chapters, more than 10 chapters, like I just told you about, from The Greater Reality. And I'll also send you over 300 pages, which are chapters 1 and 2, which is the academic analysis of the free data. I'll send all of that material to you for free. Just send me an email to info@agreaterreality.com. info@agreaterreality.com. And so after we finish our discussions, I'll send all that material to you. But you have to promise to me that you'll read that book, The Mind of God.
Believe me, I'll read every inch of it.
Yeah, because it'll answer a lot of the questions that you pose.
Well, because, you know, Ray, at the end of the day, what I'm doing, all these things, yeah. I mean, on the show, I talk to cops, I do true crime, I a lot of that, but a lot of my curiosity is driven by my question of my own mortality. That's really what it comes to.
Well, this is what it's all about. the book, The Mind of God, it really is, it's the analysis of the journey of the human soul.
So, Ray, let me ask you a question. At all the PhDs and doctors that you've been in contact with, what is their position on what the military is recording, these objects, what they're, you know, very sophisticated instruments? What is up there? These are very physical objects that they're...
Everyone in our organization views the UFO as a consciousness-based phenomenon, just like Dr. Jacques Vallée and just like J. Allen Hynek, you know, 2 years before he died, okay? They don't view this as a physical object. Let me give you an illustration so you can begin to understand this, because this is not easy to understand because it has the physical dimension of it, okay? Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée always says, the riddle to all of this is because the UFOs are both physical and they're both psyche. In other words, you know, a consciousness-based phenomenon that's able to manipulate space-time, okay? But it's the physical aspect that gets all these nuts and bolts people distorted out of whack, okay? Mm-hmm. Think of, my goodness, there's literally millions of people that see deceased people. Okay. Many of these people see a dead person after they die. Okay. For example, you bury your Aunt Sally. You were at her cemetery 2 days before. Okay.
Right.
2 days later, you see your Aunt Sally right in front of you. Very, very physical, wearing her favorite Sunday dress. Okay. So then you ask yourself the question, was Aunt Sally real or not real? Hmm. Also, you ask the question, was Aunt Sally physical or was she not physical? The answer to those two questions is both.
That's interesting.
Okay. She was real. She was not real. She was physical. She was not physical. Just like if you have you ever heard of the physicist Erwin Schrodinger?
Yeah, actually I have.
Okay. Nobel Prize winners. One of the pioneers of quantum mechanics. Okay. Also, what people don't know, in my book, I talk about it. I have quotes from numerous of the Nobel Prize winners in quantum physics. They all believe that consciousness was primary. Did you know that?
Yeah. You know, let me ask you something. Now that I'm hearing
And I want to continue with that thought. Hold on. They all hypothesize that consciousness was primary. Why? Because quantum mechanics leads to the assumption that we're all one. There's nothing separate, okay? And then many of them got into the Upanishads, which is the Vedic religion of ancient India. Why? Because the Upanishads were the earliest texts that talked about the same phenomenon that they were researching. You know, everything is all interrelated. There's no separateness, just like quantum mechanics. So Erwin Schrodinger, okay, in his tombstone, he has a quote from the Upanishads. He was a leading scholar of the Upanishads. In his writings, he has numerous references to the Upanishads, okay? And he also states that consciousness is primary. But let me get back to another point that I want to get at. Erwin Schrodinger had a famous thought experiment involving putting a cat in a box and putting this nuclear device that would kill a cat, you know, inside that box, okay? And so he posed the question to everybody, you know, after you went in, then you took a peek, is the cat alive or dead? Okay. I'm not going to go into the whole thought experiment because it's a lot more complicated than what I'm saying. Okay.
Right.
But basically his response was, it was both. It was both alive and it was dead.
It's kind of like particles and atoms in space react differently upon observation.
Yes, that's what that was all about. You know, just like the double slit experiment.
Right. Okay?
But what they were getting at is to the whole nature of the nature of our reality, okay? And that it was consciousness based, okay? And so that's what these books that I'm telling you about, not the book Beyond UFOs. The book Beyond UFOs was just to analyze what UFO contact experiencers, you know, responded to all of these almost 700 questions, okay? And what we determined was that these were consciousness-based experiences, okay? So in the next book, The Mind of God, which is the introductory article to this four-volume book series titled A Greater Reality, okay? What I didn't mention was that Volume 3 and Volume 4 are chapters written by experiencers of the contact modalities. People have had three or more different types of experiences, like that medical doctor I told you about. You know,
right.
They not only had, you know, 12 UFO sightings, he also had two NDEs, tons of out-of-body experiences. They've seen ghosts and spirits, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What these other books from A Greater Reality and The Mind of God talk about is the theoretical analysis of the nature of our reality, which is consciousness-based, and the paranormal, what we call the contact modalities. And so our organization, you had mentioned earlier the question about all of these academics, what do they believe about the UFO contact phenomena? Well, they all believe, number one, all of them, that consciousness is primary.
Right.
And not our material reality. So that means that the UFO phenomenon is not necessarily a physical phenomenon that we're interacting with. Okay. Secondly, they believe that the UFO phenomenon, together with all of the paranormal, is actually one phenomenon, one consciousness-based phenomenon, and needs to be studied as one instead of the UFO guys, they just study the UFO stuff. The NDE folks, they just study only NDEs. The folks that study ghosts and spirits, they just study ghosts, okay? The people that study out-of-body experiences, they just study out-of-body experiences. That's how it is now. You understand? That's how it is now. But what we're arguing is that we need to change that whole mindset, okay? And blow it up like an atom bomb. Why? Because all the hypotheses that we had about the nature of each of these different phenomena, okay, it's much more complex than what they initially thought, okay? And so out of all of those groups that I told you about, the most physicalist, the most materialist in their orientation is the UFO groups, okay? Because the NDE folks, they know that this is not a material philosophy. They know that this involves the manipulation of space-time, okay? The out-of-body folks, same thing. They know that this is not a materialist phenomenon. They know it involves the manipulation of space-time. The people that study ghosts and spirits, the people that study ayahuasca, okay? The same thing. They know that this involves a manipulation of space-time, okay? What Jacques Vallée and Alan Hynek stated 40 years ago, that the UFO phenomenon is a phenomenon involving a manipulation of space-time, okay? So by definition, if something involves a manipulation of space-time, then it's interdimensional in nature. In terms of your terminology, some might use multidimensional. I prefer the term interdimensional in nature, okay? So yeah. Vallée knew this. Hynek knew this. Dr. M. Mitchell knew about this. All of the researchers involved with that book, Beyond UFOs, knew about this. All of the researchers in our organization, the Consciousness and Contact Research Institute, know about this. But again, ufology has totally ignored this book. Okay? Totally ignored it. Why? Because our research findings contradicts all of their life. All of what they've been researching.
Well, you got to understand too, Ray, it's a lot of these guys depend on the appeal, the mystery. They want to sell something that's mysterious because unfortunately that's the majority of humans love that mystery, that they want it to be leaning towards more fiction to capture interest. Right. And it's unfortunate.
What it is there's a whole mystery associated with it from approaching it from a consciousness-based perspective, even more of a mystery. Because if you're just viewing it as a physical flying saucer and your focus is primarily on photos, videos, radar, and UFO crashes, which is what they've been focusing on for 80 years, what the hell have you learned in 80 years? My response to that question is almost nothing.
Agreed.
Really, what have you learned in 80 years with this materialist approach? Almost nothing. Okay, but yet, what did we learn from our 5-year academic research study of the UFO contact experiences? We learned a hell of a lot. Okay, and what we learned, as I said before, totally contradicts what's circulating in ufology. Okay, so again, it's very, very important. I'm giving away all this material for free. People need to send me an email, and I'll send you all this free material.
Yeah, I'm going to put that email in the description. Right, let me give you the mindset of a 12-year-old, right? This is the thoughts of a 12. When I was 12 years old, my grandmother passed away. And one of my cousins on my mother's side of the family at the funeral said they saw her. And I was confused by that. So I went outside. I remember sitting in Brooklyn. I was sitting on a little sidewalk. And I wondered to myself at 12, is it that this existence is all around us and I can't perceive it? And certain people can? Is it? I mean, that's a 12-year-old's thoughts. And then I evolved later to figure out it's very likely that there are several existences here in our real time. We just can't perceive it. We either lack the software or for whatever reason, we don't transmit the same way. That's a 12-year-old's thought.
Edgar Mitchell, in his article that I told you about earlier, and I'm going to send you his article, okay, in my email to you, he talks about how non-local consciousness works. And what it is the ability of humans to be able to tap in to the information fields, what is commonly called the Akashic records, okay, of our reality, and have the ability to obtain this paranormal information, okay? Uh-huh. And that is a process that happens to all major experiencers of the contact modalities, whether it's a near-death experience, whether it's UFO contact, after you've had out-of-body experiences, after you've seen, the sighting of Aunt Sally, all of a sudden, you begin to have all these paranormal experiences, okay? So what's occurring is that these experiences trigger these paranormal experiences later on. We don't know how it does. We don't know the mechanism. The only thing we can do is document it, the process. Preston Dennett, for example, his experiences were triggered by his mother appearing to him several days after she died. Right in their home, she appeared to him. Very, very physical. Okay. A short time later on, he saw a program on the news, CBS News. Dan Rather was talking about this very now famous case of this huge 747 commercial airliner seeing an acorn-shaped UFO in outside of Alaska.
I remember that. I remember that.
Very, very famous case, okay?
Yeah.
Well, he saw that on the news, and then he told his family members. And one of his brothers said, well, 2 weeks ago, I and several of my friends saw a UFO right outside the house. Hmm. And all of a sudden, Preston all of a sudden got hooked. He then called all of his friends. They all told him the details of the experience. He eventually went on and joined MUFON. He began doing investigations of people that have seen UFOs. And then he quickly realized that these people were having primarily paranormal experiences afterwards, after the UFO sighting. Later on, he himself began to see UFOs, okay, a whole boatload of UFOs. Then later on, he began to have other paranormal experiences. He began to see other deceased people. He then had an out-of-body experience. He learned how to induce them. He bought those tapes of Robert Monroe, okay, of how to induce out-of-body experiences. So he learned how to do that. He popped out of his body, and that whole period of learning to harness the OBE phenomenon lasted almost 2 years. And then he wanted to learn how to harness the astral travel phenomenon. And as you will soon learn by reading my book, the astral travel phenomenon involves the same mechanism as an out-of-body experience, but you're popping outside of that reality where you're having OBEs into a much more higher astral realm. Okay? And then in that higher astral realm, these experiences, you could generate, you can manifest intentions, experiences. So he popped out the first time in these higher astral realms, and he knew he wasn't, in his neighborhood flying around. He wasn't around his house flying around, his consciousness, He realized that he had popped through, And so the first thing he did was he started yelling out his mother's name, Mama, Mama. And guess what immediately appeared right in front of him?
His mother. Yeah.
His mother. And then he began to have, for years, experiences with his mother in an astral realm. Okay. And then he learned how to control it, and he would go like to other dimensions, other realities, and he would have tons of experiences at a astral level. And he says that by far his most important experiences is not the UFO stuff, was not seeing ghosts or spirits, was not his out of body experiences, but his astral travel experiences. Okay. Which are very, very similar to the near-death experience phenomenon.
It's. I'll tell you what's interesting is I listen to a lot of documentaries. I'm one of these people. I can't watch nonsense TV. I got to learn stuff. Yeah. And I was on a walk once. I had the headphones in, and I remember a gentleman saying, "Quantum science will not be utilizing materials, It's going to be that science is going to be more developed upon what you're speaking about. And it kind of makes sense, right? Because when you think in terms of space travel, it's pretty infeasible to build a ship and travel to the nearest star system. That takes generations. You would have to freeze people. And even then, things in space could damage a ship. Things the size of sand can significantly damage a ship. But if you're doing it astrally, it would make more sense.
Yes. Like, for example, the remote viewers, the major remote viewers, okay? When they were asked to remote view, let's say, the other side of the moon, okay? Boom. In less than a minute, they were there. They were looking around, okay? Same thing if they were asked to remote view, you know, Saturn or Jupiter, you know, boom, within a couple of minutes, they're there, you know? They just have to focus the intention, okay? So with consciousness is what's going there, what's doing the remote viewing is your consciousness. And a lot of people that have out-of-body experiences, again, they're very different from astral travel experiences because these experiences involve two different types of dimensions, okay? So, but people describe out-of-body experiences where you have sight, you have hearing, and you have smell. Hmm. Those are the senses that you have. Yogis, I just listened to it. I'm like you, you know? I listened to an interview of this major yogi, you know, from India. And this is a man now in his 70s, you know, and he mentioned about the out-of-body experience involving those three senses, okay? Not touch, because he said you try to grab something is like your perceived hands, you know, which you don't have, go right through an object, you know? You try to go, your consciousness can go through an object, you know? But in terms of taste was the other one, taste. You don't have the ability to taste something, but you certainly have the ability to smell, to hear, and to see. And that's what a lot of these astral travel experiencers and out-of-body experiencers, their books that I've read about them, they discuss this, okay? So this is your consciousness. This is your soul, your spirit, whatever you might want to call it. But my preferred term is your individuated unit of consciousness, who you are, which is in essence a consciousness entity.
Yeah, your raw energy form.
Yeah, correct, correct. And so when you have a near-death experience, your consciousness travels up the different astral realms. It goes right past the 5D reality of where out-of-body experiences take place. It goes right past the higher astral realms where the astral travel experiences take place. And you're going straight into the mind of God, which is where the NDE experiences take place. You're going straight to source.
Right. Okay? And I'm glad you said that because so growing up, I never subscribed to organized religion. I think that's horseshit, in my opinion. But I did come to the conclusion early, or you know, as even with the show and the evolution of my way of thinking, is that God, or what we call God, is an architect. It's an energy, a source, you know. And it's because when you look how vast the space is, there's no shot that some deity made here alone, and he made us in his image. A lot of that to me is just, you know, a fable. So. A long time ago, Ray, someone asked me, because I was, you know, I was married to someone who was very Christian, and I went to their church, and he's like, well, where do you think you're going to go? Are you going to go to heaven? And I told him, when I pass, I would prefer to explore the universe and see the different planets and moons, and that would be heaven to me, is just being able to travel everywhere and see everything and learn as much as possible forever. You know, heaven.
What I would encourage you to do, and all the listeners out there, okay? Dr. Jeffrey Long has a book that references God. I forgot the exact title of his book, okay? But it's a book that what he did is he took all of the people that have open-ended responses to questions of their experiences relating to God, okay? And what he did is he wrote an entire book on what these NDE experiencers are talking about with their experiences with God, okay? And so let me look at the book right now. The book is titled God and the Afterlife, A Groundbreaking New Evidence for God and the Near-Death Experience. That was published in 2016, God and the Afterlife.
Who's the author of that?
Dr. Jeffrey Long, L-O-N-G. And Jeffrey is one of the co-editors of our book, A Greater Reality. He's one of the leading NDE researchers in the world. Okay. As I said, he has a statistical database where he's been collecting statistical data on NDE experiences for over 20 years. So he took all the data of what people said about God, and he analyzed it, and he wrote a book about it, okay? So, but all of the NDE people are saying the same exact thing, you know, Raymond Moody, Dr. Bruce Grayson, Dr. Kenneth Ring, you know, Dr. Pim Van Lommel, you know, all the major NDE researchers, they all said the same thing. So there's no contradiction among them because the topic of a life review, God, topic of spirituality, the topic of love, these are all primary topics of the NDE phenomenon, okay? So, so again, this is not woo-woo science, okay? These are what tens of thousands of NDE experiencers have told all of these research academics, and it's all the same thing.
Well, that's exactly what science, that's science, because he went out and he did the study, he found multiple sources and came to a conclusion based on the percentages. That's how science works.
Yeah, and it's not only that book, his research, all of the major NDE researchers are saying the same exact thing, okay? Except what he did is he wrote a short book, you know, very short, very easy to read, about only about the topic of the God phenomenon. But yet all these other researchers did mention it, like at a chapter in one of their books, for example, you know?
So it's referenced, it's highly referenced.
Yeah, it's highly, it should be highly referenced. And but as I said, all these other researchers have their own independent research where they're saying the same thing, because this is what NDE experiencers are saying, okay? And so from his research questions, we asked many questions for the Beyond UFOs book. And you know, how do we know that? Because Barbara Lamb said, Ray, these people are getting all these spiritual messages. Kathleen Martin is saying, Ray, these people are getting all these spiritual messages, okay? Rosemary Ellen Guiley, okay? Mary Rodwell, okay? Barbara Lamb, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, all these people that have been researching UFO contact experiencers, they knew what the data was going to say, okay? But what they didn't have was the actual statistics, the actual numbers, the breakdown, because no one had ever done that before. They just knew that a high percentage of the people in their group, okay, received spiritual messages. They received medical healings. They had out-of-body experiences. They had near-death experiences, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the research findings. But what they didn't have was the data, the statistical percentages.
Right.
But now with this research study, we did it in four languages, okay? The four languages, we had over 6,000 individuals. Just in our Spanish language survey, we had more 1,300 individuals that took our Spanish surveys. So altogether was more than 6,000 people. And guess what? No matter what language, no matter what country, they answered in exactly the same exact way.
Wow. That's impressive.
Let me give you an example here. Just in our English language survey, okay, our PhD statistician, Dr. Russell Scalpone, he broke down all the responses into five geographic areas. One area was the U.S., another area was Canada. Another area was United Kingdom. Another area was the rest of continental Europe. Okay. And then in another area was Australia with New Zealand. He grouped them both together. Okay. So we had five different distinct geographic areas. And then he started to look is how these five different groups analyzed the questions, how they responded to the questions. Well, what did he find out? He found out that there was less than a 5% variance, 5% differentiation of how they responded to that question. Huh. So that means that they were answering pretty much the same exact way, no matter where you lived. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is. That's really good data. That's really good data.
Because it was done by PhD academics, okay?
Yeah.
It was very well thought out. But yet, these people like Richard Dolan, for example, this guy doesn't have a PhD. He doesn't even have a master's. He was not even an academic.
Let me ask you a question.
Historian,
Richard Dolan, what I see him constantly, like what seems to be every documentary.
He's at every conference. He's at every lecture. He's everywhere. He's like the poster child for ufology. And the reason why, because he's always appears on these Netflix programs, you know,
right?
Ancient Aliens and all of that stuff. So people, and also he makes a living out of this.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know, like,
I don't make a living out of this.
Is he an experiencer? Is he a researcher? I'm not sure what he is.
He's not a researcher either. Okay. He wrote a book about a year and a half ago, titled The Alien Agenda. Like, he freaking knows what the hell is the alien agenda, right?
Right.
And he's never done any research data like we did, okay? But yet, he knows the alien agenda, okay? What he did is he did a research survey of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and all of these people that had abduction type of phenomena, okay? Mm-hmm. Which is all literature from, like, the 1980s, okay? Recently, you don't hear about abductions. Okay. Kathleen Martin says it's been 15 years that she's heard of an abduction. Okay. Mary Rodwell, same thing. Okay. Barbara Lamb, the same thing.
Hmm.
Okay. It's like all of a sudden you don't hear about abductions anymore. Okay. But yet this guy, Richard Dolan, said that David Jacobs was the best researcher out there in the field. And just to inform your audience members, David Jacobs, at most, he hypnotically requests 200 people. That's it. That's it, 200 people.
Right.
And he picked who he wanted to do that to. And the people that he picked were all people that viewed their experiences as highly negative.
You want to hear something interesting, Ray?
Well, let me just finish this last point.
Yeah.
Bud Hopkins was another classic case, okay? I personally know of 5 different individuals that had gone to Bud Hopkins. And he was said, well, you know, I'm too busy, or maybe you ought to see Dr. Leo Sprinkle. Why? Because once they told them that their experiences were not negative, he didn't want to deal with them, okay? Why? Because both of these two individuals viewed, you know, the quote-unquote alien abduction phenomenon as purely negative and hostile, okay? And David Jacobs says that the sole purpose for this is hybridization of humanity, okay? And David, Jacobs said that he's never met anyone that's had a positive experience, not one person. But yet our research study of 4,300 people.
It contradicts that.
Totally contradicts. It was only 4%. Okay. So, but yet this guy, Richard Dolan, said that by far the best researcher in this field was who? David Jacobs.
I'll tell you something, Ray.
So what does that make Richard Dolan and his book on the alien agenda? Okay. What does that make? From my perspective, crap. Garbage.
Yeah, because I never understood. As many times I've seen him on there, I could never comprehend who he was or what he did. I never understood it.
He's the poster boy for ufology and all of its problems, okay?
And yeah, there's another guy, too, Richard Doty. They post him in everything, Richard Doty.
He's another fake, you know, so-called whistleblower.
I looked into him, and he worked for Army or Air Force Intelligence. So everything he says may or may not be fact, you know.
To spread this information, okay? Now, here's another thing about Richard Dolan, okay? I heard one of his interviews after we published our book, okay? Now, mind you, I read to you some of the PhDs in our organization.
Right.
And in the Beyond UFOs book, we had Dr. Bob Davis, a retired professor of neuroscience. Okay. He taught neuroscience for over 35 years. Hmm. Rudy Shields, astrophysicist. Okay. From Harvard. Bart Swanson, PhD physicist from Princeton University. John Klimo. Okay. PhD from Brown University. He taught for over 45 years. And many major psychology programs. Okay? Those are just some of the PhDs involved. Russell Scalpone taught statistics for master's programs and PhD programs. Okay?
Yeah, you're speaking in terms of well-read, well-versed people versus an opinion.
Real PhDs. Okay?
Right.
As I said before, this guy, Richard Dolan, doesn't have a PhD. I don't even think he has a master's. Okay? He certainly never taught at any universities. Okay? And he has no science background. But yet on a radio podcast that he had, he referred to this book Beyond UFOs as woo-woo science. Okay?
Hmm.
Well, guess what? Who had the PhD scientist? Did Richard Dolan have the PhD scientist? No. He had David Jacobs, who said that 100% of these UFO contact experiences were all negative. And his work was based upon hypnotic regression. So again, what does that tell you of Richard Dolan's opinion of our book?
Well, that's just it. These UFOs. It's opinions. It's
yeah. He didn't even read the freaking book.
Yeah. No. Don't worry about it. There's no curating here. So you know, here's another thing too. And I did some research. And I found in the research that abduction phenomena started to slow down in like 2006, like significantly. And then I had
because what it is you have to understand. Okay. What's your first name again?
Adam.
Adam. Okay, Adam. You have to understand, Whitley Strieber publishes this book in the early 80s, okay? Communion, okay? All of a sudden, David Jacobs publishes his book about, you know, abductions, okay? Bud Hopkins published a book about abductions, okay? He gave several of his clients to the late Dr. John Mack, okay? Mm-hmm. To interview and to research as well. So based upon the individuals that that Bud Hopkins sent to the late Dr. John Mack, who was a professor of psychiatry at the Harvard School of Medicine, okay? Those people were already tainted, okay? Dr. John Mack wrote a book titled Abductions, okay? Guess what? After he published that book, all of a sudden he got flooded with thousands of letters of people that had these experiences. And when he began to interview these people and to talk to these people, he realized that what the people that Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs had sent to him did not match up to the people that were writing letters to him.
Huh.
Okay? Totally different types of experiences. Okay? And then later on, he wrote a book. And this is another classic book that you definitely need to buy. You definitely need to buy this book. Is titled Passport to the Cosmos.
All right, let me write that down. Passport to the Cosmos?
Passport to the Cosmos.
Okay.
And it's the second book on this topic that was published by Dr. John Mack. And that was published shortly before he died. Okay. He had an auto accident. Okay. And he was killed. And so that book, Passport to the Cosmos, talks about this phenomenon. Pretty much like what we mentioned in Beyond UFOs, what our data states, that these were consciousness-based experiences, that these were like spiritually transformative experiences, people being brought to other realities, and these people know that our physical reality is an illusion, okay? That these are all consciousness-based experiences, okay? Including the so-called abduction phenomena. But yet, materialist ufology, do they ever mention that book, Passport to the Cosmos, by Dr. John Mack? No. Okay.
I never even heard of it. And I mean, I've dug pretty deep.
So. Okay. Well, this is a professor at the Harvard School of Medicine of psychiatry. Okay. They never mention why, because that book totally contradicts materialist ufology.
Huh.
Do they ever mention Dr. Vallée's work? Okay. Dr. Vallée's work titles Dimensions. His book titled Dimensions. Okay. The book is titled Dimensions, A Casebook of Alien Contact. Now, why did Dr. Vallée gave it that title, Dimensions? Okay. He gave it that title because we're dealing with an intelligence that's able to manipulate space-time because it's a multi-dimensional type of phenomenon. But does anybody in ufology discuss that book? No.
I got to read those books because now I'm intrigued now.
Well, what I can do is I could send you a PowerPoint of a lecture that I gave. Let me send you video clips that I took from that presentation. I have video clips of J. Allen Hynek and also Jacques Vallée. And that'll, to me, these are the fathers of modern ufology, okay?
Right.
But what happened was that they were steering ufology in a certain direction. But ufology instead turned towards the bullshit of David Jacobs, Bud Hopkins, and the early Whitley Strieber, and Richard Dolan, all these materialists, okay? But now, does ufology talk about the new Whitley Strieber? Do they talk about the new Kathleen Martin? No, because those perspectives, and the perspective of Valet, Dr. John Mack, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, those perspectives are moving away from a materialist perspective. So that's why I want your audience members to understand that, you know, you need to be able to do these readings. I'm going to give you this stuff for free, okay?
Right.
In info@agreaterreality.com. Info, I-N-F-O.
Yeah, before we close, remind everyone where they can find your websites. And I'll put it all in the description as well.
And also the website. The website is A Greater Reality. It's being finalized right now. And so by next Monday, it should be up, our website, all the changes to it. Again, it'll give you a totally different perspective on the nature of our reality. And it's not based upon woo-woo science. And it's not based upon the bullshit alien agenda of, what's this guy's name, Richard Dolan. You know, it's not based upon bullshit, okay? It's based upon real science, real academic research, and what they have come up with, okay? And it's the antithesis of this Stone Age approach of materialist ufology.
Yeah, they have to evolve the way they're thinking.
Yeah,
you know, it's not healthy to sit. If you have a singular mindset, you're not using science. You're not evolving. You're basically still selling what it is that you think works, as opposed to looking at all aspects.
As I said before, I posed that question to you, and you answered it. I said, over the last 80 years, what has the approach of studying UFO photos, UFO videos, UFO crashes, okay? What has that approach given us over the last 80 years? And that's the approach of materialist ufology. What have we learned?
We're still in the same spot. There's a question mark above all when it comes to that.
Yep, we're in the same spot. We've learned squat. We've learned almost nothing about this phenomenon. But yet, from our study Beyond UFOs, which was an academic research study developed by PhD academics working together with major researchers of the UFO contact phenomenon. And as I mentioned to you before, some of the names, you know, Kathleen Martin, you know, Barbara Lamb, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who himself was a PhD academic, okay, Rosemary Allen Guiley, okay, she had published 65 books on the phenomenon. Brad Steiger, who has published 175 books on the paranormal, including over 20 books on UFOs, and researchers at that level working with PhD academics. And what did we learn? Tons of data, tons of research findings, okay? And all of it contradicts what is circulating in materialist ufology. But yet, if I could count on my hand, on my two hands, the number of these ufologists that have actually read my book. You think Linda Moulton Howe has read this book?
Probably not. You know, because what I'm hearing from you, I don't hear almost at all.
Nothing, nothing, nothing. Why? Because these people, they make a living out of this. Okay? Yeah. They make a living of selling the new spin. Okay? All right?
Yeah, I agree, because when I have the hardest time watching Ancient Aliens. I just can't bring myself to it.
Why study fucking Ancient Aliens when you got real fucking aliens right in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, and they always do that thing where like, well, it could this be the fact? Well, our theorists say yes. Well, who are your theorists? Like, where do you get this information?
These people that barely got a high school degree, you know, talking about their wild theories.
That's what I think about. I think about when they say that, I swear to God, whenever they say that, I imagine seven people in a Starbucks in a think tank.
That's what it is. They're selling entertainment. That's all it is.
Yeah,
just like Richard Dolan. He's not selling research. Why? Because he's never done an ounce of research except reading historical material. He went and gotten his undergrad, you know, to study history. So that's what his background is, you know. But in terms of a researcher, an academic researcher, he's not.
Yeah.
You know? And so that book about the alien agenda, that's fucking entertainment.
I agree. You know, I can't stand bullshit. That. That's one of the things that's the biggest pet peeve I have is when I recognize that they're doing something in the name of entertainment versus that I'm a real, like, if you give me a documentary, and it doesn't even matter what the subject is, if it's tangible information, I'm glued. I'm glued to it. So I'm learning something.
I've been working with a cinematographer team, okay? Cinematographer team, husband and wife. They did more 11 documentaries for William Shatner, and one of them for Leonard Nimoy's son, titled In Search of Spock, okay? They also did this documentary called The Captains. They interviewed all of the captains in Star Trek, you know, from Richard Shatner all the way to, you know, all the different series that they had, you know?
Right.
So the point is that they work with William Shatner for over 15 years doing all of these documentaries. So this is a professional crew. Now, on top of that, they've done documentaries with, they're based out of Miami. What was it with all these famous groups out of Miami, you know, Latin groups with J-Lo and the Cuban woman who did all those Miami Vice themes and things of that sort.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they've done concerts with major rock groups, you know. They videotaped them, commercials, tons of commercials that you see on TV all the time. So this is, you know, real professional people, okay? So for 5 years, we've been going all around the United States interviewing scientists, medical doctors, and experiencers. We interviewed over 40 PhD academics and medical doctors, and close to 70 experiencers of the contact modalities. And we're working on a documentary. I wanted to be, you know, heavy-duty science-oriented, but they said, Ray, you know, we can't make it pure science-oriented because it's not going to fly. No one's going to watch it, you know? We have to make it entertaining, you know?
Yeah.
And so we reached a consensus between, you know, the entertainment stuff and the science stuff. But it's all real. It's not fake or bullshit. You know, there's nothing made up here, you know? And what it is, it's a mixture of consciousness research and the research on the contact modalities. You know, exactly what we've been talking about, you know, for the last hour, okay, hour and a half, okay? And so that's going to be presented, and what we're going to try to do is try to pitch it to Netflix and also to have a TV weekly series like Ancient Aliens, except every week we'll have a different experiencer, okay? Like, remember that medical doctor that I told you about? That's had everything in the kitchen sink?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, we interviewed over 70 medical doctors, you know, people like that, medical doctors. One is a retired DEA federal agent. He brought down Manuel Noriega, who was importing tons of cocaine, you know, into the Caribbean. Baby Doc Duvalier, the dictator of Haiti, also bringing in tons of cocaine. So there's a guy that busted them. He was the principal guy that discovered this. And eventually, you know, led to their arrest. Okay? He was a supervisor for the DEA in the Caribbean. He was in charge of Puerto Rico, Santo Domingo, and also Haiti. He was in charge of all those islands, and that was where the main drug was being, you know, smuggled in from. Okay? Yet, he's one of the world's major contact experiencers that nobody knows about. His wife is a PhD psychologist. His daughter's a PhD psychologist. And both of them have witnessed all this paranormal stuff in their house. The wife more than the daughter, but everything triggers around the husband.
Well, that's amazing.
Nobody knows, knows about this.
You have a pretty elite
videotape.
Yeah, you have a pretty elite lineup of people, right? I mean, that's...
All those people that I mentioned to you before, they're all videotaped.
That's perfect, man.
Academics, okay? They're all, you know, including, you know, Gary Schwartz, who was a professor at Harvard and Yale, and he's been researching on communication with the deceased, you know, Raymond Moody, all these people that we talked about, Rudy Shields from Harvard, the astrophysicist, you know, Glenn Ryan, the PhD biochemist, you know. So these are all, what we're doing is mixing science with the contact experiencer. And so every week, our pitch is to be able to present a new case study of a new individual.
I'd watch
that. Whether it be an hour or a half an hour. And in each of these videos, we're going to be superimposing what the scientists are saying.
Yeah, I would watch that. That would gain my interest.
This is not Ancient Aliens, okay?
Right.
This is real science together with experiencers of the contact modalities. And our approach is that all of this is not materialist based.
I think that's what's going to make it appealing. Personally, I think that'll make it way more appealing. I think that because it's science driven, it's data driven, and it's, you know, that's, to me, that's what it should be. It shouldn't be people.
That's what we're working on. The documentary is almost done. And then later on, after the documentary is done, is to be able to sell the pitch, you know, to these people that show ancient aliens, you know, and say that, look, you know, if you really want something that's really going to pique people's interest, this ancient alien bullshit has reached its limit, you know.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, it's they're a far stretch from reality and some of the things that they're saying on this show. It's insane. I'm one of these people. I will be interested in something until I notice something like that. I'm done. I can never look. Well, I can just never watch it again.
We know that if they're able to accept this proposal and have this, weekly presentation of different experiencers, we could literally have thousands of case studies. Okay. Because the people that we have interviewed, they're just unbelievable, their experiences. Okay. As I said before, volumes 3 and 4, we have over 70 articles of people that have had not one, not two, but 3 or more different types of contact experience.
But that's perfect. So listen, Ray, we're going to close out. So those of you listening, we're going to say good day, good evening, or whatever it is for you. And I'm going to talk to Ray in post.
Okay. And just for people to know, our website, today is the 24th. It's Tuesday, January 24th. So by the following Monday, the changes that we're making to our website should be in effect. So please go to our website, which is agreaterreality.com, agreaterreality.com. And our email is the same thing, except you just put in front of it, info@agreaterreality.com, info@agreaterreality.com. Send me an email and I'll send you all these books and all these chapters, you know, over, my goodness, over 1,000 pages of writings. I'll send it to you for free.
And that'll all be in description so anyone could find it.
Yeah. So thank you, audience members. And please do try to at least read the book, The Mind of God. It's only 200 pages. It's written in simple, plain language. But the concepts behind it are heavy duty. They're not simple. Okay? And if you like it, you know, go to Amazon, look up The Mind of God, and give us a 5-star review if you like it.
Perfect. All right, everyone, we'll do this again. And Ray, give me 1 second.